If you're in sales, it's a lot easier to make money if you have more customers moving to an area, right? So invest in areas with that, what I call a rising tide. Invest with operators that think the same way. And you don't have to know all the answers, but know the questions to ask. Hey, you know, why are you investing in this space, in this sector? Why are you investing in this region? Why are you investing in this city? Why are you investing in this neighborhood? And a good operator should be able to go through and answer all of those questions. Because I think the last thing, not the first thing you should look at, the last thing you should look at are the numbers in a deal.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Chris Larson is the founder and managing partner of Next Level Income, through which he helps investors become financially independent through education and investment opportunities. Chris has been investing in and managing real estate for over 20 years. Chris, welcome to the show.
Sam, great to be here. We're not too far away. I'm like almost on the other side of Tennessee. We're like just on the other side of the border here in Asheville, North Carolina.
You are, but you're not in the Delta. The Delta's flat.
Asheville way different.
Not.
Way different.
Way different. Yeah, man, that's loads of fun. Love your home state and certainly love your hometown, Asheville. It's a beautiful place to be. Chris, in 90 seconds or less, there's three questions I ask every guest who comes to the show. Can you tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, so I started at age 21. I talk about a lot of this in my book. And if you want to get it, nextlevelincome.com, you can click on the book link. I'm going to send you a copy if you're listening here today. I wanted to have financial independence, Sam, because I was racing bicycles and you didn't make a lot of money. Long story short, my best friend, my training partner, my college roommate passed away. I raced for another year after that. And when I came out the other side, I realized that, you know, there was more to life than racing. But I knew that to live life to the fullest, you still needed financial independence. So I set out on my journey, started in the stock market, read 250 books over the course of 4.5, 5 years, ultimately decided on real estate, bought my first property. You mentioned I've been doing this over 20 years. At 21, bought my first property, continued to buy single family rentals before entering a career in the medical device industry because I needed to make some money to buy properties to be an investor. I managed those properties for about 15 years before moving into commercial. Our main business now, I was able to leave the medical device industry due to our real estate investments. And our main business now focuses on commercial real estate. So we started investing in deals personally, and now we syndicate deals. So we allow other investors to come in alongside of us. And we've expanded outside of multifamily to also include self-storage, mobile home parks. And even personally, we run a couple Airbnbs now as well. And when I'm not doing that, I spend as much time as I can with my 10 and 12 year old boys. We're about to go skiing in snowshoe this weekend, as a matter of fact.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that. Chris, one of the things you said was that I've heard about you is why you shouldn't invest in your 401k. Now, you said you read 400, 250 books, whatever, more than enough books, and then decided to invest in real estate. What does that even mean? And why do you say don't invest in your 401k? I want to hear something controversial right out of the gate.
Yeah. So I was like, what can I say that is going to get people's attention? It's a little controversial. So I'll never forget. I was sitting there with my accountant 5 or 6 years ago, and he looks at me. He goes, Chris, you got to stop contributing to your retirement plan. And I'm looking at him like, what do you mean? Because I worked for Medtronic right down the road from you in Memphis, Tennessee for 10 years, had a company match, put a lot of money into my 401k, did very well. And what he said to me, it made me think a lot differently, Sam. Mm. He said, the problem, Chris, is you're going to be stuck with these required minimum distributions in retirement. And I thought, okay, that's right. Now, here's something we don't really think about. If you invest $100,000 at 10% rate of return, and you're paying 30% tax today, and you get tax deferred returns, okay, and then you don't have to pay tax in the future, or you invest that same $100,000, 10% return, don't pay tax today, but pay 30% tax in the future, in what scenario do you have more money?
Hey.
The answer is they're the same.
Oh, are they?
And so the variable, Sam, is taxes. And implicitly, if we decide to invest tax deferred in a retirement account, we are implicitly deciding that we're going to pay a lower tax rate in the future.
Right.
Now, how many people think that taxes are going down? If you're watching, raise your hand. If you're listening, raise your hand if you think taxes are going down. If you note, I took my hand down. I think taxes are going up in the future. And if you're listening to the show, if you're an investor, if you're a real estate entrepreneur or operator, you're probably going to continue to make a lot of money. You got to be careful about that. So that's why I switched from investing in my retirement accounts, and I started putting money into cash value life insurance, which is a lot more secure, from creditors, and it has gives me a lot more control. So again, I'm not saying no one should ever do that, but you need to evaluate your choices, especially if you're an entrepreneur and you shift away from having a company match. You know, there are a lot of other options out there.
Right. Yeah, that's really intriguing. And we've certainly talked about that several times on this show, is the opportunity and value of using a cash or a whole life insurance policy and how to properly structure that. So that's really intriguing. I love that thought there. Let's talk a little bit how you started to scale your own commercial business, because you did single family, you did a bunch of that for 15 years. Then you finally, you know, were able to step away from your day job. You said, hey, I want to get involved in commercial. How did you even pick your first asset?
Yeah. So about almost 10 years ago now, I was in a meeting, met a gentleman. I was kind of lamenting the performance of my single family portfolio. Right. And he said, you should check out multifamily, Chris. I'm like, well, it's kind of just a different flavor. And he's like, no. He's like, there's some differences. Talk to my friend who's an operator. He syndicates these deals. I talked to him. I look into the demographics, and that's part of the reason I wrote my book. It's chapter 7, talk about kind of the rising tide and the demographics that support multifamily real estate. And I'm like, wow, this guy's speaking my language, because I got into medical device because of the demographics. So I started as an investor. I invested in the space for about 3 years. And then my original partner and I, we decided we actually had more real estate experience than the group we were investing with. So we came on board with them as partners. We bought our first deal using them kind of as our mentors to buy that deal. That was in 2016. So we're talking about 6 years ago that we started out on that journey. And we acquired about one deal a year for the first few years. And then, you know, over time, it's like a snowball, you know, it starts off and the momentum, it's slow to pick up. And we started sharing it just with friends and family. And then you start to have people referred to you. And then, you know, I started a podcast a few years ago and people started reaching out to learn more about what we did. And then really what happened was it blew open, Sam, when I left the corporate world. People were really curious how I was able to do that, because I was making really a healthy six-figure income. I ran a couple of different successful territories over the course of my career. So it got people's attention. And then, you know, building the team around us to support, you know, the property acquisitions, and that is really the confluence that all came together.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, but now you guys are in self-storage, you're in mobile home parks, and I think we shared this in common, even investing in something a little more non-traditional in Bitcoin. How are you scaling those different asset classes? You mean call Bitcoin an asset class? I don't know.
Sure. Well, let's focus on the real estate. That's kind of where business revolves around. But yeah, so the multifamily, the self-storage, and the mobile home parks, they're all commercial real estate, but they're all slightly different.
Right.
Okay. And if you're a business owner, you're an investor, you know, Sam, I know you understand this as well, but we have different operational teams for each one of those asset classes. Starting off that first deal, yeah, my partner and I, we did a little bit of everything. We both, you know, met with brokers, we talked to investors, we, you know, toured the properties, we looked at the, you know, packages we were going to, you know, put in and quotes and all that stuff. But as we've grown, you know, from 100 units to a couple hundred units to 1,000, a couple thousand, a few thousand units, now we have teams that operate the multifamily side, teams that operate the self-storage. And we're talking about both acquisitions and operations, as well as the mobile home side. So I think it's really important as you grow and scale that you decide not only what you're good at, but also what you enjoy. And you start to find people and find what they are good at and what they enjoy doing. And that makes them ultimately the best at what they do.
Yeah, that's interesting, because you guys really, you kicked it off more on the active side. And then it sounds like you said, hey, look, as opposed to us scaling out these different asset classes and building a team around it, let's just partner with teams that are already there. How are you guys doing that? Are you coming in as a fund of funds, or did you start your own fund that people can invest in your fund? What's that look like?
Yeah, well, actually, we are GPs on the deals. We just have, like, within our team, we brought in a team for self-storage acquisition, as well as self-storage management. The multifamily side, which was our primary business, we built and scaled that up. The mobile home parks, again, a different team that we work with there. You know, one part of the team focuses on the acquisitions, one focuses on the management side of things. Yeah, so we're not doing a fund of funds. I've been working as a general partner on each of these asset classes, which is probably why there's, you know, we've scaled slowly, but, you know, it's gotten to a few different asset classes now.
I love that. Let's talk a little bit about some of the demographic shifts and the moving trends that you guys are seeing. I mean, because these asset classes take you to a variety of places really around the country, I would imagine, for various reasons, depending on the asset class. So tell me some research you've done on that front, and what have you found?
Yeah. So again, like I mentioned, chapter 7 of my book, I talk about, you know, the importance of demographics, the importance of job growth, population growth, income growth in an area. So if you want to dive into kind of the methodology behind that, you can read through that. But I just did a podcast this morning, a solo cast, and I referenced the United Van Lines annual moving survey of 2021. So this came out early January, and it talks about where people are moving. So this is really simple. Whether you're starting off in your career and trying to find a nice geographical area to move, whether you're looking for personal investment for yourself that you're actually going to own and operate, or whether you're looking to be an investor, I think this is really interesting. Right. It's very simple. United Van Lines tracks this. They take all this information and they say how many people are moving to states and what percentage are moving in and out of those states. Now, we're going to kind of paint this with a broad brush because you can check out that podcast and that blog on my website and dive deeper. But the bottom line is people are moving away from the Northeast. They're moving away from California. And what do those places have in common? Illinois, for instance, as well, kind of the Midwest. They have high taxes. They have, you know, some of these places don't have great weather like California. You know, they have great weather, but they also have kind of this lower quality of life because of certain things. Like California had a lot of restrictions over the past couple of years that really decreased the quality of life. You can't go to the beach outside in California during COVID, right? So who cares if you live at the beach if you can't go to the beach, right? So a lot of people said, wait a minute, what's going on here? People that are retiring, they're moving away from those areas as well because they don't want to pay high taxes in their retirement. They have more flexibility. The number one reason people are moving is jobs. Number two is family. And number three is lifestyle. So where are they moving? They're moving to the Southeast in huge numbers. We're talking about the Carolinas, Florida, Texas, Tennessee, which I'm sure you know, you pick a great state to be in if you're an investor. They're also moving to places like Oregon, Utah. And again, you can probably discern if people are moving out of California, they're probably more likely to move closer in one of those states. You know, if they're moving out of the Northeast, they're probably more likely to move to a place like the Southeast. So you have this joke about people moving from New York to Florida or from Florida back to North Carolina. They actually call them halfbacks. There's like a name for people. So many people do it. Yeah. So then, you know, so you look at those states, you look at the reasons why, and then you can actually drill down even further to look at the cities within those states of where people are moving. And, you know, no surprise, a lot of these cities are in the news, like Raleigh, where, you know, Apple is taking jobs, Greenville, South Carolina, where a lot of car companies are moving, Charleston, South Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina, Fort Myers, Florida, Naples, Florida, Orlando, Florida, Miami, Florida. And then there's same thing in states like Texas. I could go on and on. But that is kind of the high level overview of how you determine the best places in this country to invest going forward.
Yeah, and maybe this is too much for this podcast, but even with that data, like, okay, so we looked at United Van Lines record or report, and I know, I think U-Haul puts out a similar report, but it's like, you look at these reports, hey, oh, that's cool, everybody's moving to Tennessee or North Carolina. What do I do with that as an investor?
That's right. Yeah, so again, this is kind of your top line information, right? So you say, okay, let's figure out kind of a region. Then you say, okay, where within that region do I want to invest? So let's say you decided on North Carolina, just because I live here. And then you say, okay, you look at North Carolina, you say, what states? You can go to the state level and say, where is that going to be? Then you look at Raleigh. So then you start to say, okay, where around Raleigh would I want to invest? So if you're actually buying property yourself, I talk about, you know, I've written articles about this too. You can go to the city level and you can look at the city's 5, 10, 20 year plans. And you can determine the next hot area of the city to invest in, all right? Because the city's going to tell you where they're going to put their money for infrastructure. Now, if you're a limited partner and you're looking for operators that you can invest with, you want the operators to think the same way. You want to say, okay, you know, Sam, why do you own and operate in this area? They should have good analytical reasons why they do that. If they're like, well, I've always lived here. Maybe they're lucky they live in an area that's been doing really well. But, you know, people are like, oh, Chris, do you invest in North Carolina because you live there? No, actually, I moved to North Carolina because I wanted to invest here. So I've talked about that a lot in my articles, in my book. And, you know, I wanted to live somewhere where people are moving because, hey, if you're in sales, it's a lot easier to make money if you have more customers moving to an area, right? So invest in areas with that, what I call a rising tide. Invest with operators that think the same way. And You don't have to know all the answers, but know the questions to ask. Hey, you know, why are you investing in this space, in this sector? Why are you investing in this region? Why are you investing in this city? Why are you investing in this neighborhood? And a good operator should be able to go through and answer all of those questions. Because I think the last thing, not the first thing you should look at, the last thing you should look at are the numbers in the deal. Because right. I can tweak my spreadsheet all I want and make those numbers look really pretty, but if you don't have good fundamentals behind the reasons for those numbers, then those numbers are useless.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point. And I'm glad you brought it up because that's going to be my next question for you is why are numbers the last thing you should look at? So if you are a limited partner or you are a passive investor, what should you look at first?
Yeah, the first thing after you've decided, you said, hey, I want to invest in real estate. I want to invest in multifamily. Okay. The first thing you should do is find a good operator because really what you can't, like an operator can't control population growth, he can't control job growth, they can't control cap rates, they can't control any of those variables. The only thing that an operator can control is their strategy, as well as the price that they pay for an asset that's going in. So if they have a good, repeatable strategy that with a great track record that they can reference, okay, great. If something like a hurricane comes through or, you know, cap rates expand or compress. I was invested in a property in Houston and the oil market went down. The economy tanked in Houston during that period. That wasn't the operator's fault, right? But, you know, there were things that the operator could have done differently to have that asset improve. It wasn't their fault the hurricane hit, right? But, you know, so there's variables outside of your control. So what you want to do is you want to focus on the things that you can control as an investor. And the things that you can control as an investor is choosing the right operating team to work with.
Right. Yeah, 100%. The operators first, the market, of course, like you've already talked about, I think would be second, and then the deal third.
Like, there you go.
Once you have solidified the deal, you can't change it. But the first two variables you can fix. Yep. Long before you put your money in the deal. So passive investor, those are the two things. I'm glad you took time to kind of break down the why on that, that you really should be spending your time focusing on. I love that. Chris, thanks for taking the time to jump on today. This has been a blast learning about your business, what you guys are doing, and really how you've scaled so quickly into a variety of asset classes. That's an absolute blast. Thanks for that. Let's jump here. We'll jump here to the final two questions, if you don't mind. The last two questions are this. One, what is one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Yeah. So we started last year a financial literacy program for a group called Open Doors of Asheville, which is a local nonprofit here. And I think, you know, financial literacy is something that we could all do a better job of when it comes to society. If you're a parent and you're listening today, I got a great little resource. It's 5 steps on how to teach your children to be successful with money. And that's at nextlevelincome.com/kids. I walk through the 5 things that we're doing with our own children. And you can start doing that at a very young age, just a few years old, all the way up to, you know, becoming teenagers and ultimately helping them decide what to do for college.
And then last question, for, which is great. Yeah. I love that the Open Doors of Asheville and financial literacy, because that is, yeah, it's so sad that we have kids graduating high school that can't balance a checkbook and yet they were forced to take calculus. And it's like, this is the very basics. This is the basics. So good job doing that. I love that. Last question for you this, Chris, is if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, real easy. Nextlevelincome.com. You can check out all of our resources, ton of free stuff there, our book, our podcast, our blog, the kids, the 5 steps to help kids become successful with money, as well as a ton of other videos and, you know, people that are professionals like yourself, Sam, sharing their habits, their traits, their strategies, and everything that they've learned. And most importantly, the mistakes that you don't have to make so you can shortcut your path to financial success.
Chris, thank you so much. Have a great day.
It's been a blast. Thanks, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.